Hey, I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm the host of Vermont Edition, and I'm just popping in to tell you that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. To say there's a lot going on in Washington right now is an understatement. But a lot of what's swirling around in the political news has less to do with policy than with politics, and it can all get a little distracting. Today on the show, we're going to be joined from Washington by Vermont's senior senator, Patrick Leahy. Over the course of a week, we're bringing you interviews with Peter Welch, Patrick Leahy, and coming up on Thursday, Bernie Sanders. We're trying to get both a broad and a narrow sense of what's going on in Washington. We will talk politics today, I'm sure, but we're also trying to hone in on some of the actual legislative action moving through Congress and what influence our delegation has on the laws and policies being enacted in the United States. If you have a question for Senator Leahy, you can line up now. Call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Senator Patrick Leahy joining us today from the Senate in Washington, D.C. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. Nice to have you.
Well, thanks, Jane. I wish I could be there in person, but unfortunately, the Senate's in session.
Well, we'll forgive you this time, Senator.
Thank you.
Let's just jump right in and get right to it. One of the major stated priorities of Republican lawmakers, and in particular since they failed to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, has been to do something major about tax reform. And, you know, as anybody who's been reading the news knows, this is a big deal right now in Congress. There is a plan in both the House and a plan in the Senate. The House bill is further along in the process. And if both bills pass, they'll still need to be reconciled. But the Senate version has a pretty major problem that has to be fixed before it can go up for a vote if Republicans want to pass it with a simple majority. It has to find a way to ensure that it won't contribute to the deficit after its first decade. And from what I can see, Democrats don't seem to be in much of a mood to help find a way to make that happen. But do you agree that we need tax reform?
Well, I think there are always some areas we could change in our tax policy. But since I've been here, that's only worked when you've had both parties work on it. So far, the bills before the House and the Senate have been put together behind closed doors. Only Republican members and lobbyists for special interests, corporations, those who want to preserve the tax breaks of the wealthiest and so on, have been allowed in the room. I think the whole country would be better off if they actually did it the way we're supposed to. Have hearings, have both Republicans and Democrats there, have the public be able to see what's going on and be in the room, and then vote it up or vote it down. They're trying to do procedural things so that there be no real debate. There will not be alternatives presented. That doesn't help anybody. In the long run, it doesn't help Republicans or Democrats. In the short run, it seems to be done because Donald Trump says you've got to do something. After he had a colossal failure in trying to change our health care laws. Well, presidents come and go. This is legislation that's going to affect all Americans, Republicans or Democrats, for decades to come.
Yeah, it sounds like you talk about closed-door sessions, and Senate Finance Committee Chairman Orrin Hatch has said this morning that he's working on a markup. It's going to be ready for lawmakers later today. Democratic Senator Ron Wyden says, you know, this is not happening in the regular way it should. It's being pushed through too fast. It's not going through the regular order in the Finance Committee. And, you know, all of this is changing so fast that it sounds like senators don't really have a chance to weigh in and figure out what's right and what's wrong. Do you feel like you have a voice in this tax plan at all?
No, we really don't. And the fact that they want to do this without giving a voice, without having the public see it, I'm more concerned about the American public. I don't care whether Republicans or Democrats having a voice in seeing what happens. Ron Wyden is one of the best senators here. He's always worked with Republicans and Democrats seeking bipartisan solutions. As I do. I mean, I've had more bipartisan legislation passed of mine where I've had Republicans and Democrats on it than any other member of the U.S. Senate. But Ron Wyden tries to do the same thing. And if we can't have this, well, then the American public gets hurt. Right now, they say they want tax reform. Well, they are going to cut taxes on wealthy individuals. They're going to cut on corporations. Well, they left out the fact that they're putting in all kinds of loopholes. They're going to create enormous deficits. People like Donald Trump, who are ultra-rich, they're going to do very well. The average Vermonter is not. For example, they would repeal the deduction for state and local taxes. Well, that's going to amount to an average of more than $12,000 in Vermont. That's going to hurt the average Vermont taxpayer. It's not going to make any difference what party you belong to. And the part that we have to think about for our children, with the bills they have, either the House bill or the Senate bill, it's going to add $1 trillion to our deficit, $1 trillion. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, one of the ways that they plan to solve that is by making significant deep cuts to Medicaid to try to help balance that. Safe to say you're not a fan of that move.
I'm not. The average Vermonter loses badly by these. We may have a few ultra-rich in our state who benefit. I haven't heard from any of them saying, go ahead and do this, because they know it's going to hurt the average Vermonter.
Are there very specific things in the Senate tax plan, as you know it right now, and again, it's changing, that you really disagree with or that you would really like to see changed?
Well, I disagree with the idea that we can have a special exemption here, which is actually going to encourage corporations to go overseas. That doesn't create jobs in America. It'll create jobs in other countries. It'll save taxes for the companies to do it. I want things to encourage jobs in America. I'd be happy to give a tax break to corporations if they can demonstrate that they've had for a certain period of time creating jobs, not just for a short duration to get a tax break, but be able to go back, okay, you created X number of jobs in the last 2 years. Here's a tax break for it. Things like that could help us. Not a tax break that allows you to send these jobs overseas. And I don't know who the lobbyists are that sat in those closed door meetings with the Republicans. We had 300 or 400 billionaires yesterday sent a public statement saying, don't cut our taxes. We should pay more. Cut the taxes of the average middle-income working man and woman in this country. I happen to agree with that.
We got a question for you from Matthew, Senator, who says, the Paradise Papers are a recent investigation by the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, revealing millions of documents showing the financial hideaways of corporations like Apple and Nike, but also the wealthy and political elite. To what extent do the Paradise Papers impact your review and questioning of the GOP tax plan?
Well, I look at, for example, Secretary Mnuchin said, oh, by the way, I forgot about this $100 million or $200 million or whatever it was he had deposited in the Cayman Islands. Well, Jane, you know, you and I could easily forget where we put $100 million or $200 million or $300 million. I mean, I sometimes make sure I go through my clothes before I send them to the cleaners in case there's a $10 bill in there. But, yeah, this is happening. There's nothing in here that's really going to help that. The average taxpayer in Vermont has no way of taking advantage of these loopholes that the super wealthy has. Maybe that's why Donald Trump is the first president, certainly since I've been in the Senate, who's refused to show us his tax returns. I don't think my job as the Dean of the Senate, as the U.S. Senator from Vermont, is to protect those people who can store hundreds of millions of dollars offshore and escape taxes. What I want to do is protect the average people that Marcel and I see in the grocery stores on weekends in Vermont, that we see walking down the street, that I talk with every day on the phone from Vermont. These are the people that are working hard, and they're not getting the breaks. They deserve breaks.
There are, questions about politics, questions about ethics, and certainly that is a big topic in American culture right now. We got a note from Dave who wants to know, if Roy Moore, the Republican Senate candidate from Alabama, gets elected, will you vote to expel him? Or do you think he should get some kind of trial or hearing before being expelled? Do you think allegations are enough to expel an elected senator? And again, Roy Moore, the candidate, has been accused of approaching and in some cases sexually approaching young women, some girls as young as 14.
No, that's a very good question. The Republican leader has in the Senate, Mitch McConnell, says that Roy Moore should drop out.
In fact, he says he believes the women who have accused him.
That's right. And he is the one person who could instigate a move to not allow him to sit in the Senate. That is something that is, well, certainly not in my lifetime have we had such a move. I would much rather see the people of Alabama say enough. They have, and I don't say this a partisan way, they have a good conservative Democrat running who's been nominated, and vote for him and send a signal that we're not going to stand for this kind of thing. We're not going to support people who have this. It's bad enough we have a president who brags about groping women, brags about the affairs he had as a married man and so forth. But this goes even beyond that. We're talking about a man in his 30s going after teenagers, even writing, and one that claims he never met her. Well, in her yearbook, he wrote a long note and talks love and then says and writes his signature, district attorney. So in other words, know who I am.
So you believe the women then?
I do. I was a prosecutor. I'd always look at allegations and say, okay, let's see what's behind them. But when there's these many, with these specific facts, people who told others at the time of it, the handwritten note in the yearbook, yes, I believe that. And when his defenders come out and say, well, we had Joseph and Mary and they had Jesus. Come on. That is disgusting, making claims like that. This is not what any religious faith would be teaching. And it's being a predator. I prosecuted predators. I'm amazed that he was never prosecuted. Maybe the only thing that where he escaped it, but he was the district attorney during part of that time.
You know, Senator Leahy, Roy Moore aside, there have been several women in Congress who have come forward lately to say that, you know, as women share stories of being harassed, sexually harassed, or approached in ways that they didn't appreciate by men, that several women in Congress have come forward and said, yeah, me too, that this has not been a place that's always been particularly welcoming for women. Are there things that you and your male colleagues are doing to try to rectify that situation now?
Well, we've always had standards in my office and places that if anybody has any question, they can go to. But that's why when I was chairman of the Judiciary Committee, I made some major changes in the Violence Against Women Act. I got Republicans and Democrats to join me. We passed it through the Senate. We passed the identical bill through the House, and that helps a lot.
Specifically, in your body, in the Senate.
Well, let me finish.
Yeah.
I also put through $483 million to help that. Now, this creates programs available to anybody. But in the Congress, we recently introduced another piece of legislation that would require instructions for everybody, members of Congress, staff, directors, everybody else. The most important thing is to have a place where people can go. That's what I tried to do in the Violence Against Women Act. It's been very effective. People have a place they can go because you have to watch out for this, whether it's at Vermont Public Radio, the U.S. Congress, the XYZ Corporation, no matter where it is.
I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're talking with Senator Patrick Leahy. Let's go to Bob, who's calling in from Springfield. Hi, Bob. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Senator Leahy. Three issues, but I think the primary one would be the student loan interest situation where, a person pays their student loan debt at the end of, during the course of the year, and then at the end of the year, they can deduct the amount of interest. That's one of the things that they're talking about stopping.
This is in the Republican tax plan.
Yeah, when you file your taxes and you file, itemized, and that's going to hurt a lot of students. I mean, so many students today are crippled by this financial debt, and I don't see any. It's really a critical situation. I think that's the primary question I have.
So Bob has questions about that ability to write off your waivers for grad school in particular.
Well, he raises a very, very good question. If you're very wealthy, it doesn't make any difference. The average person is not. I worked my way through college and through law school. I had student debt when I got out of school. I paid it off, but I would not want to see the crushing debt that students have today and the very high interest rates they have. And then to say, well, good thing you got a job, but you can't deduct what you're paying on interest. Certainly, any company can deduct interest they're paying. Students should be able to deduct it too. They got in debt to get a better education, so they could be more productive members of society. We have to. But here's the things they want to take away. They want to take away deductions for high medical expenses from serious illness, and a lot of people have serious and debilitating interests. They want to take that away. They want to take it away from students. But you can deduct interest on any cost you might have in shipping jobs overseas. Come on. This is not the American way.
Let's go to Sue, who's calling in from Essex. Hi, Sue. You're on the air.
I have a question regarding our attorney general, and if we should be extremely concerned about having someone in office who has such a poor memory and an inability to recognize red flags. I think if I would probably remember meeting the Russians, and I probably would remember if someone was talking about colluding with the Russians and being a civilian and not someone in office. So should we be concerned?
Sue, thanks for your email. And Senator Leahy, before you respond, I'll add a note that we got from Scott, who says, Jeff Sessions amended his previous testimony in today's House hearings to reflect new recollections. He is frequently unable to recall many details of his time with the Trump campaign or as attorney general. If he's not being dishonest, his trouble forming and retrieving memories suggests that he is unfit for service. So to add to Sue's question, Scott says, at what point will you call for him to step down or be removed from his current office?
You know, it is interesting because today when he was testifying before the House, he said he's never misstated positions in his further earlier testimony. Well, Senator Franken and I were on the Senate floor yesterday pointing out a number of areas where he gave contradictory statements or statements he gave under oath were later contradicted by indisputable facts. You know, I think he has to come back before the Senate Judiciary Committee. We've had both Republicans and Democrats say that. And tell us what's going on. I posted my speech on my own website, leahy.senate.gov, and I wish people would take a look at it, because he has not been forthcoming in what he's talked about. One of the things that I said yesterday on the floor of the Senate, and what Jeff Sessions, I've known him for years, we've worked together on some things, we've opposed each other on some things, but he seems to feel that he has to be the president's counsel. Well, the president has counsel. The attorney general is supposed to be the attorney general of the United States, representing the interests of all of us, not partisan interests. We once had an attorney general whom I and others excoriated when he referred to himself as a member of the president's staff. The attorney general is not the secretary of justice. He's the attorney general of the United States. That's for all of us. Jeff Sessions, for some reason, feels he has to reflect the interests only of Donald Trump and nobody else. And that's a bad mistake. And it hurts all of us.
Well, I mean, to put a fine point on it, that note from Scott asked, at what point will you call for him to step down or be removed from his current office? I understand that you think he's made contradictory statements and you don't like the way he sort of frames his job. In fact, that's not the job he has. But what about this idea of saying you're unfit for office? Is that something that you'd go to?
I voted against his confirmation. That's my statement of whether he's fit for office or not. I voted no. And I voted for Republican nominees and Democratic nominees. I voted no on this one. There are some in the Trump White House hopes he'd be forced out and have to step down, and they'd replace him with somebody already in government who might be even worse. You know, it's almost a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation.
While we're talking about appointments and votes and, you know, who deserves to be in a position of power, you have called many of the Trump appointees to the judicial branch, and I'll quote you here, comically bad and inarguably unqualified. Who in particular has raised your hackles?
Well, we've had several that have been found unanimously unqualified by the ABA, and the American Bar Association. They have usually been very, very good Republican nominees, but they found unqualified. In fact, in the last four presidencies, I can only remember two nominees that they, in four presidencies, they were found unanimously unqualified. In the first year into his first term, President Trump has already nominated two nominees that the ABA unanimously judges unqualified. Another two, a majority of them found unqualified. The latest one, a man named Talley, has never tried a case, and he's being nominated for a trial court. And, oh, by the way, he forgot to mention on his sworn disclosure that he's married to a senior member of the White House, of the White House administration, one of the senior lawyers in the White House. It's an egregious potential conflict of interest. We didn't realize this because we expected that he said everything truthful in his filings. He didn't. He should come back and try to explain that. But I would worry. I've tried a lot of cases in federal court and state court. You have to do that. You have to know what you're doing. I can't imagine appearing before a trial judge who had never tried a case.
Can you take us out, though, to the end here? You know, what's the fallout? What are you worried could happen if all of these appointees move forward? And many Trump appointees are still in the pipeline, but many have been approved. I mean, just what's the ultimate problem?
Well, the ultimate problem, these are lifetime appointments. You have people who have come in, endorsed the birther. You know that President Obama wasn't born in this country. They've taken positions that indicate they feel only certain people should be believed, and on. You can't do that. If you walk into a courtroom, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, you ought to be able to look at the judge and say, I'm going to be treated based on the merits of my case and the law. I voted for an awful lot of Republican nominees as well as Democratic nominees. I voted against some Democratic nominees and Republican nominees, including Jeff Sessions when he was nominated to a court, because I didn't feel people could come in and think they're going to be treated impartially. Here, you're having a small select group, a right-wing judicial group, advocacy group, lobbying group, recommend to the White House who they should pick. The courts last long after whoever is president. You should have somebody in there who's going to represent and treat all Americans fairly. If not, the credibility the federal court should have is going to be lost. And keep in mind this. If the court doesn't have credibility, how are they going to enforce their judgments? Some of the major civil rights things, Brown versus Board of Education, and all these could only go through when people said, okay, that's the court. Whether we agree or not, we give them credibility. Courts don't have armies. All they have is credibility. And no president in my lifetime has ever attacked courts the way Donald Trump has. If they rule against him and his bogus Trump University, well, then it's because their parents came from Mexico or whatever it might be. You know, he'll go after Jeff Sessions when a federal court ruled against Donald Trump. He said, "Well, they're in some little island." No, that's one of the 50 United States.
I'm going to read you a couple of comments that we've gotten from Vermonters who are concerned about this issue that we're talking about, the judicial appointments. Grace says, I'm extremely concerned about Trump stacking the federal judiciary with young, unqualified reactionaries who are mostly white men. Appointing judges to the federal bench is one of the greatest powers wielded by the president, and the consequences of those appointments have the potential to affect us for decades. Nancy in Putney believes that these are also deeply unqualified, and she writes, in my view, racially biased judiciary candidates nominated by the Trump administration. And Richard in Putney says, as a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, you are especially aware that the Republicans blocked hundreds of President Obama's judicial nominees. Why aren't you blocking the extreme right-wing nominees that Trump is rapidly putting through? These judges will tilt the judiciary to the right for many years to come.
Well, I happen to agree with all of them. The fact is, of course, the Republicans are in the majority. If we had three more Democrats, we could block them. Under the Senate rules, then go. I'll give you one example. Nobody, in no time, certainly in my lifetime, has there been a nominee to the U.S. Supreme Court by either Republicans or Democrats who wasn't given a vote. You know, either vote them up or vote them down. President Obama nominated Merrick Garland to the U.S. Supreme Court. For the first time in history, the Republican leadership said, we're just not going to have a hearing. We're not going to allow a vote. And they can do that. And then, of course, they put in somebody who the Koch brothers and some of these very conservative groups told the White House they should nominate. Now, what I've done when we've had judges in Vermont, I've gone to a bipartisan screening committee that's given recommendations, and all the people I've recommended have been confirmed unanimously. The most recent, not a judge, but a U.S. attorney, the first woman in Vermont's history to be confirmed for U.S. attorney.
That's Christina Nolan.
That's right. But the point made is, oh, yes, I can vote against him, but it takes 50 votes plus one to confirm them. There are 52 Republicans who have voted lockstep, and if we even get down to a point where there's 50-50, then the Republican Vice President, Mike Pence, will step in. If we were in the majority, a lot of these people would never even be considered. They'd be almost laughed out of the committee. And these the callers, the people who write to me, are absolutely right. You have people who are biased against women, biased against different groups of people, have no qualifications. I mean, some of them, I look at it, I don't know if a federal judge would even hire them to be a clerk in their court.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and we're spending the hour with Senator Patrick Leahy today, talking about what he's been working on in Washington. Other issues he's been vocal on and involved in are relationship with Cuba. Senator Leahy has said he's frustrated by increased sanctions or more sanctions being placed now on Cuba. He's been working on getting chemical waste from the Vietnam War out of Southeast Asia. We're also talking with him about taxes, about spending, and about other things happening in Washington. Let's go to Ron, who's calling in from St. Albans. Hi, Ron. Go right ahead.
I just wanted to ask the senator a question about veterans' benefits. We have a veterans who have been put out of the military since 2001 to 2008 November that got severance packages. And what happened is the VA turns around and recoups those packages, the veterans' severance pay, through taking, like, what, myself, I got $133 garnish every month out of my check. I'm 100% disabled vet. I was put out of the military for a back injury that sustained when I was in Iraq. And they're still collecting the money out of my check. And as of November 2008, the law was supposedly changed that they weren't going to do it anymore. And they stopped doing it for veterans after 2008. They don't take their severance pay anymore, but they're still taking it from people from 2001 to 2008, and I know because they're doing it to me. And I know I brought this up to Senator Sanders, Leahy, and Welch, Congressman Welch. I brought it up to all three of them and asked them to do something about it. I think it's a miscarriage of justice and maybe an oversight on the law, but the VA is still taking the money.
Senator Leahy, anything you can do about that?
No, it is not right. There should be changes. I'm not on the Veterans Committee, but I will talk with those who are. I would also hope, you say you contacted all three of us, I would hope the caller is also talking with John Tracy in my office, in my Vermont office. We have a toll-free number there. He's a Vietnam vet, very knowledgeable in this. And let us make sure, if it's an administrative oversight, it might be easier to change that. If it needs legislation, I would support such legislation to change that.
So, Ron, if you can stay on the line, we will get you a number for Senator Leahy's office that you can call to get in touch with John.
Well, the number in Burlington is 802-863-2525. There's also a toll-free number.
Great. Thank you very much. Ron, keep us posted. And also, we will have Senator Sanders on the broadcast on Thursday if you'd like to pose that question to him. Senator Sanders has been involved as well on veterans issues and military issues. Senator Leahy, another question here. Monica is calling in from South Burlington. Hi, Monica.
Hi, thank you. And thank you, Senator Leahy. I wanted to ask if there's anything you can do to inform people that we had an assault on a federal assault weapons ban from 1994 to 2004, and then the Republicans blocked that from being renewed, and it hasn't been renewed since. I think that there, the number of mass shootings that took place during those years was far lower than what it is now. And rather than a discussion about new control, is there a way the public can be educated that we really should be focusing on reinstating former controls that had a very good impact?
You raise an excellent question, and one I've raised. The original ban on assault weapons was passed in 1994, and I voted for that. And a 10-year life, we had a renewal up in 2004. I voted for that. It failed to pass. And let me tell you what I did do. When we were in the majority, as chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, I put through four bills. One was the firearms trafficking and straw purchasing. That would stop all these straw purchases where somebody's able to buy dozens of guns for somebody else who might not have been allowed to buy them otherwise. I put through the assault weapons ban through the Senate, a universal background check, so you couldn't escape a background check by going to internet sales or some gun show sales, and a security, school security grant. I got every one of those a majority vote in the Senate. The Republican leadership in the House refused to take them up, so they died because you needed both bodies. They're sensible things. Having a universal background check is very sensible. I see no reason why somebody, and I'm a gun owner, I'm a shooter, I was on the rifle team in college and all that. Nobody needs to have weapons that belong on a battlefield, not walking down the street of your town or walking into a church or a school. We have no other country that I know of would do this. We have more firearms per person than virtually any other country in the world. These are common sense things. Shouldn't you know if somebody's going to buy a gun, shouldn't you be able to do a complete background check on them? And why does anybody need a weapon that belongs on a battlefield? And the irony is, Vermont, which has really the least gun laws of any state in the union, does have one. It limits the rounds of ammunition you can have in a semi-automatic weapon when you're deer hunting to give the deer a chance. Nobody objects that law. We ought to have the same law that protect children going to school.
Yeah, and yet gun control measures didn't happen after the Sandy Hook shooting during a Democratic administration. You know, what likelihood?
They passed the Democratic Senate. And, I get frustrated that we seem to be blamed as Democrats. Why haven't you passed this when it's Republicans to stop it? Who is going and talking to these Republicans and saying, what are you going to do?
Who is doing that?
Well, if they elect Judge Moore in Alabama, nobody in Alabama is. If they continue to elect people who run against Democrats who have supported gun control, then nobody there is. I get frustrated sometimes in my own party. They'll say, well, this person's right on 99 out of 100 things, but there's this one thing they're not. So we probably better elect somebody else who would be wrong on 98 of these things. And then, of course, we do not get through the things we want. I was able to get through a decent gun control legislation through the United States Senate because we were in the majority. Where it failed was getting it through the Republican-controlled House. That means the president, nobody gets a bill to sign. President Obama would have signed each one of those bills if we'd got them to his desk.
When you say, they keep electing, isn't that then the will of the people?
Well, apparently they can say that. I don't think, though, when you have, I'd say more importantly, it's probably the will of some very specialized, powerful lobbies. For example, to have universal background check, the vast majority of Americans agree with that. That's not the way it's stated when somebody's running against a person who vote for it. I think the vast majority of Americans agree in not having military assault-type weapons on the street.
Senator,
in fact, a poll will show and have shown even NRA members support universal background checks, but the NRA came out and told the Republicans in the House, if you support this, even though it's passed the Senate, if you support this, we'll support people run against you.
So that makes it sound like not much likely to happen, at least right now.
Well, it is frustrating. And I'm very frustrated by it. I've proven that we can do it. I think if we had a Democratic-controlled House and Senate, it could be done. But we have to back the people who feel this way. For example, we got tremendous impetus on legislation shortly after President Trump was inaugurated with the Women's March. Look at the number we had in Montpelier. Doubled the population of Montpelier with people who stated their support for women's rights on the State House Capitol. We had hundreds more who came to Washington at their own expense. I mean, Marcel and I had coffee and donuts for them. We couldn't believe the number who showed up there. We marched with them. There were tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, actually, of women who marched, and that sent a strong signal, as we did in Montpelier. But we've got to do it nationwide.
Yeah, it sounds like what you're sort of tossing it back on the will of the people then. If the will of the people is for change, then people need to take action and make it happen.
Have the will of the people, not the will of a few special interest lobbying groups.
Well, Senator Patrick Leahy, I appreciate your time. I know you had to move things around to accommodate our schedule today, so I appreciate you spending the hour with us. Thanks very much.
Happy to do it, Jane. Take care.